This is a Library Channel program from the UC San Diego Library. Visit us at www.uctv.tv/library-channel for interviews, author talks, and other programs that will inspire you to read, write, think, and dream.
Okay, hi, my name is Kaori. Before starting my presentation, I would like to thank everyone everyone at the library and academic departments who kindly supported this event. So I'm going to talk about my work. So I was born in 1979 in Naha City, Okinawa. I was determined to do photography once I entered the university. I loved working in the darkroom and learned how to do the entire process, including film developing and print processing. I became completely absorbed in it and would take photos with film, immediately develop it in the darkroom and create prints. At the time, I mostly took black and white photos, and I would sometimes raise the sensitivity of the film by developing it in hot water, or would print by changing the grade of the paper, etc. So I was doing a lot of experimentation during both the photographing and darkroom. From 2008 to 2010, I was active as a member of photography magazine LP. I worked on features of artist friends and of student photos from Indiana University's photography department. I also did some special interviews and planned discussions with Ikuo Shinjo, who is a professor of literature at University of Ryukyu, and Ryudai Takano, who is a photographer based in Tokyo. This was an extremely stimulating time where I learned a lot. And since 2011, I have been editing and publishing the magazine for art and criticism. Its name is Las Barcas. It is based in Okinawa, and its members are artists, researchers, curator, film festival programmer, and novelist. Las Barcas means small boats in Spanish. The image I have is a loose network of many small boats floating on the ocean. If many people get on one big ship, it could eventually become an oppressive power. The power of a collective should not dominate people, things, and ideas. Instead, each of us should be a small boat. Sometimes we listen to another one's story and then pass it to others. Sometimes each of us protects our solitude. Sometimes each of us gives support to one another. That is the image I have for this magazine. Through my editorial work, I constantly ponder how I can act without a definitive separation between art and society. I want to give my full attention sincerely to expressions and texts, not in the form of political agitation or of art that merely complements politics. Expressions about the body, landscape, gender, etc., should come out naturally from various perspectives which are still political. To edit the journal devoted to textual and visual art, to create a loose collective, and to raise questions in society. That is my concern at the moment. In 2016, I held a solo exhibition of my photographs unframed. The exhibit was a three-part structure with landscapes and portraits and snapshots. And I changed the exhibit three times during the 2 weeks. By looking back at my photos again and organizing them, I was able to reconfirm the wavering of time that I shot. I also took photos that recorded changes in landscape. I decided to create a photo book temporarily based on these things. Taking photos of time is something that is an underlying concept of mine. I think new images can be seen when we unframe the frame of Okinawa. That is something I myself hope, and it's a task that I set for myself. In the 2016 exhibit, Unframed, I confirmed through my photographic images that time appeared by dissolving the frame of Okinawa. Temporality is the work that emerged from looking at photos of time, light, and landscape, and asking what has emerged from these photographs. But when I create works from Okinawa, I often wonder where I can position myself as I take photographs. I am often asked what Okinawa is or what it meant to be from Okinawa, but I try to not talk about Okinawa as an exceptional space. Paradoxically, then I think very seriously about such questions. And I think these are very troublesome or tiresome questions. For example, when I introduce myself abroad and say that I am from Okinawa, people who do not know much about it ask what the climate there is like, what kind of history it has, or about current social conditions. But I wonder whether I have the right to talk about Okinawa, and I feel hesitant to explain. In actuality, however, everyone likely has the right to talk about Okinawa as long as they think very carefully and meticulously about the conceptual words that they use. One important thing for me as I continue my activities here is how to evade creating works that are bound by Okinawa as a frame or works that are seen through that frame. Of course, I cannot avoid the context of Okinawa, but when I view artworks that are produced in Okinawa, What I try to understand for most are the works on contents and forms. So I try to be analytical about such things and be sincerely receptive to the artist's own words. Then I chose my words carefully as I try to respond to them. Thank you for listening.
Hello, my name is Satoko Nema. I'm very happy to meet you today. 普段は作品を発表したり、先ほど紹介していただいたんですけど、沖縄県立芸術大学で絵画の非常勤をしています。そこで主にアナログ撮影とプリントを担当しています。
I usually produce my works, and also, as I was introduced by Wendy earlier, I also teach as an adjunct, instructor professor at the Okinawa Prefectural University of Arts, where I teach, analog photography and, printing.
また昨年末に沖縄本島から40キロメートル離れた小さな島、宮城島でギャラリーをオープンしました。
At the end of last year, I opened my own gallery, in Miyagijima Island, where I live, which is, approximately 40 kilometers, off of Okinawa's main island.
よろしくお願いします。
So thank you all for coming today.
これは、マルジナリアという作品になります。那覇アートという、那覇の都市の劇場に企画していただいた展示になります。
So this is my work titled Marginalia, and I show this at this art cultural center in the middle of downtown in Naha, which is a central city in Okinawa.
ネオンチューブと、三部作の映像のインスタレーションになります。
It consists of neon tubes and also a trilogy of visual, filmic, cinematic images.
これらは、ロードムービーのように沖縄のモノレールの終点から始まり東京へと旅立ち東京への地下鉄電車名古屋大阪へそしてまた自宅へ戻り、最後夜中の月が映し出されます。
So it's a kind of a road movie in a way, this cinematic part which begins from my home in the small island of Miyagijima and then travels via a monorail that runs in the city of Naha and then it travels to Tokyo, Nagoya and Osaka and then comes back to Okinawa with the image of the moon.
反射または移動ということも作品のキーワードの一つとしてあります。
Reflection and movement could be some of the keywords describing this work.
移動するということは、領有するということにもつながることにもなり、
But to move might also risk meaning to occupy.
写真において写すということは、そのものを移動または場所、光景を写し取り照射することにも他ならない。それは移動をしながらも非連続的なことも伴い、それぞれを選択することにもなるだろう。
To take a photograph, on the other hand, might mean, to cull something from the background. And movement might also include a lot of, interruptions, and, cuts across different places.
名指されたものでそのものを見たとき、きっとそのものを見たことにはならない。沖縄という名前を認識したときに見えてくるものは何だろうか。
And if you see something from the lens of what is already signified, it might mean we haven't seen anything yet. So what does it mean when we see things from, the signifier, the signified of Okinawa?
ここから、離れている島という展覧会のタイトルなんですけど、昨年末に宮城島でギャラリーをオープンした展示会のポスターになります。
And this part I want to talk about, my recent exhibit titled, A Distant Island, which I showed at this gallery that I just opened and I just talked about.
それは都市と離島間にあるアートを享受する格差が解消できるような、 地域に開かれた空間としてジャンルを横断するさまざまな企画ができればと考えています。
The reason why I opened this gallery is to somehow intervene into this situation where there's a large gap of knowledge, but also opportunities to see art between Okinawa's main island and so-called remote island. So I really wanted to create a new situation in which works from multiple genres could be exhibited and seen in this island, small island.
フリーランスのキュレーターで沖縄美術と中南米美術を研究されている岡田由美子さんにキュレーションしてもらって一緒に、沖縄県からの女性で企画した展示会になります。
So this exhibit Small Distant Island was curated by my comrade and friend and independent curator Yumiko Okada who is not only knowledgeable about art in Okinawa but also Latin American and Central American and also Caribbean art as well and the exhibit took place thanks to the funding from Cultural Association in Okinawa.
これが本島から離れた小さな宮城島になります。
So on the map, you see Okinawa's main island in a center, and then sort of like an offshot of that is the island where I live, 宮城島。
この写真ではないんですけど、これは1961年から74年、1974年頃の、元東丸製糖工場という跡地に、建てられた、この後に建てられたものになります。
And in the picture, you see this small sugar refinery factory that used to be there where I currently live. So this factory existed between 1961 and 1975.
なので、そのギャラリーの名前はシュガーケンルームという名前をつけました。
And that is why I named my gallery Sugarcane Room.
で、こちらが先ほどの展示になります。
And this is the exhibit, Distant Island, that I have been talking about.
これが、私が制作した作品で、反響の島という一つの島を別々の角度から撮影した三作の連作になります。
This is my work consisting of three photographs, and its title is sort of a reverberating island, island of reverberation. So it's different images of a same island from three different angles.
はい、ここからまた少しずつ私が学生の時から何をやってたかっていうのをちょっと紹介してほしいということだったので、簡単にざっくりなんですけど紹介したいと思います。
Now I would like to travel back the time and because I was asked to talk a little bit more about my earlier works, including those that I made as a university student.
これは学部の4年生の時に初めて個展を開催した記録です。日本画の技法で、銀箔を硫黄で焼き、時間をかけて変色させる方法で制作しています。
So this is my first solo exhibit when I was an undergraduate senior student still. And I majored in Japanese painting actually. So I used the methodology of Japanese painting where I burned silver leaf with sulfur.
焼くということは燃やす、燃焼させるということではなく、硫黄。無糖発布なので硫黄による銀の変化のことを言います。
So when I say burn, it doesn't mean incinerating things, but to create change in this leaf of silver through the mediation of sulfur.
銀は金や青に変化したりするのですが、それらは空気を遮断してその時を止めます。変化する時間とどのタイミングで空気を遮断するかで作品が決定されていきます。
Silver has a capacity to turn into blue and gold within time. So what matters to me is when to stop this, not metamorphosis, but transformation of color within time.
例えばモノクロ写真でプリントをするときにはネガがあって、印画紙に焼き付けると言いますが、光、現像液、印画紙の関係があって、それは時間によって濃度が変わってきますが、銀箔を焼くということも硫黄の濃度や湿度、時間によって変化していきます。
So when you print a photograph, there's obviously a light developer, fixer, and whatnot. But when I do this somewhat similar process with silver leaf, then there's sulfur.
銀色の銀箔の色の変化は、はじめに銀から金色に、次に赤や青、そして黒になり、最後には灰のように崩れていくイメージがあります。
So the ways in which silver leaf changes its color, first it becomes blue, red, blue, black, and then finally it turns into the color of ashes.
次は、シリーズ花瓶の時間、時というものになります。
Next is a series called Time of Mold.
これは絵画を制作しながら同時期に撮影していたシリーズになります。父が昔使っていたカメラを見つけたのをきっかけに写真を始めたような記憶があります。
So this is a series that I made concurrently with my another series in Japanese painting. And I discovered and started to use this very old camera that my father was using when he was young.
1960年代、70年代頃に日本でファミリー層向けに発売されて、ボディとレンズが一体になったヤシカというカメラになります。
So I used this camera that was really popular in the 1960s. It's a Japanese camera where the body of the camera and its lens are sort of like built in together, and it's called Yashica.
このシリーズはポジフィルムで撮影されて、スライドで1枚ごとにガシャガシャっていう音を立てるような形の作品になっています。
So I use positive films for this series, and when I showed it, each film or photograph slides by as if they were put into a slide projector with this clicking sound.
何年も使われなかったレンズにはカビや汚れが入り込み、撮影すると風景がかすれ、カビが映り込んでいます。
Because it's a really old camera, each time I presses the button, it also captures the traces of mold and smudges that are left on the lens. So they filter through into the landscape that I shot.
これの2007年に制作した時のメモが残っているので、それを少しだけ読みます。
So I want to read a little bit from this memo that I wrote in 2007 when I was working on this series, Time of Mold.
カビの時、1960年、父はヤシカというカメラを手に入れた。ヤシカのレンズは家族の歴史を映した。
So Time of Mold in 1960, my father held in his hand this Yashica camera, and this camera photographed the history of a family.
それは父や母が見た家族の光景そのものだった。
And this camera took the images of sort of a scenery, scenography of the family which my father and mother saw.
父がヤシカを手に入れた時と同じ年になった頃、私はヤシカのカメラに出会った。
So I encountered this camera that my father owned, at the age when my father also, obtained this camera.
レンズには無数のカビが増殖していた。
Numerous molds proliferated on the camera lens by then.
カビたちの時間、父までの距離。
Time of mold.Distance to the father.
次は、写真で初めて写真集を作った、印画紙で作った世界で一つの写真集を初めて大学院生の修了の制作として発表した作品です。
When I was about to finish graduate school, I published just a single issue photo book.
父の故郷が沖縄本島から離れた宮古島なんですが、私は時々遊びにやっぱり行っていたので、私の原風景ということなのかなと思います。
So, my father is from, 宮古島 Island, which is, south of Okinawa's main island. So as I was growing up, I frequently visited, this, island, and, I began to take photographs there.
その時に2週間撮影しに行った時に、初めて出会ったんですけど、これが父が、育った場所だったということで撮影した風景です。
So because I frequently visited the island, Miyakojima sort of like started to signify to me something like my primal scene. One time I spent 2 weeks to take these photographs, and this particular image is the house where my father once lived. Next is the series titled Bird's Nest.
これは何も話さずに見てもらおうと思っています。
I'm not gonna say a word here, so you can just look at the photographs.
次は、パラダイムという作品になります。これは、SME ギャラリーの方にも少し展示しているので、ぜひ見てください。
This one is a series titled Paradigm, and some of the works, photographs from this series photo book you can view at the SME Gallery on this campus.
2015年にパラダイムというもの、の見方や捉え方自体を会議する、また保存性があるから価値があるということも解体していくような写真集でもあります。
So this one is actually a photo book from 2015, and as it's titled Paradigm, through this photo book, I wanted to sort of question how we view and comprehend things, so paradigm.And also sort of like our way of thinking whereby we give values to things that can be preserved. How can we question that way of thinking where value is equated with something that is preserved over time?
そして実際にページをめくるごとに解体されていく形態に制作されています。
So the book is designed in such a way that the pages come off, or pages are torn off, and then they come apart. So there's an intentional design whereby the book sort of like not destroys but deforms and then comes into pieces.
また背表紙がなく、どこからめくるのかわからないようになっています。
And the book does not have a spine, so one does not know where to begin viewing when one has this book.
例えば背表紙がないということは本棚に並べにくい、見えにくい状態が生まれてくる。そういう意味では現在の制度とか効率化に終焉されないような、または瞬きする暗闇を感じるようにフレームから逃れ変容していくようなイメージもあります。
Because the book does not have a spinal cover, if you put this up on a bookshelf, you cannot see its title. It's very hard to discover this photo book if it's on a bookshelf again. And because the pages tear off so easily, it looks as if the image in this book just flits by as if in a blink of an eye.
次は、シミラークルという作品も SME ギャラリーの方で、スライドショーをしていますのでぜひ見てください。
And this one is from the next series titled Simulacra, and you can view works from this collection, this book at the SME gallery as well, but in the form of a slideshow.
まずこの写真集を開けると銀のページが現れ、写真集を見る自分自身が反射され投影されます。自分という何者かの他者の眼差しに触れる経験 ではないかと考えます。
So as soon as you open this book, there is this image of image in silver color. So what you see is a reflection of yourself, basically. So I wanted to create this moment where you are sort of confronted by your own gaze as if it's the look of the other.
抽象というイメージもありながら、それは毎日繰り返される日常の風景だということ。
So, it is something very abstract, while at the same time, it's also the landscapes that one encounters in one's everyday life.
タイトルはいろいろな意味に解釈できるようなイメージと、母語に対する疑いもあります。
So the title Simulacra perhaps contains images that are open to multiple interpretation, but also it could signify sort of like skepticism towards one's own mother tongue.
見るという行為は常に何者かに規定していくような暴力性も存在するのかもしれません。
To see perhaps frequently implies a kind of violence in terms of determination, determining things.
最後の作品になりますが、シミラークルとパラダイムという2つの作品を一つのインスタレーションとして発表した作品になります。
So this is the last work that I would like to introduce today, and this is sort of a combination or overlap between these two photo books, Paradigm, the first one, and the Simulacra, the second one.
シミラークルの2つの重なったスライドの光が軌道に乗った惑星のように点在するパラダイムに反射し投影されて姿を表すようなインスタレーションになっています。
So there are two overlapping images from the series photo book Simulacra that are projected on top of various images taken from the first collection Paradigm, and these images from the first collection seem to be scattered around and mobile as if they areDifferent planets on different trajectories.
このスライドの色の変化によって、パラダイムも変化していくという作品です。
So because of the slide images from Simulacra change in terms of color,the photographs from paradigm on which they are projected also change as well.
はい。最後まとめに。
So I'm gonna sum up.
これは図書館の方で最新の作品なので、また中曽根さんと私の作品があるのでぜひ見てください。銀箔の腐食や銀の反応でできる写真など、あらゆるもの、物質はコミュニケーションのように何かを交換しながら生きている。
So transformation of silver leaf as well as transformation of saline elements in photograph. So all things live by communicating and exchanging some of their elements.
社会にさらされながら生きづらさを感じながら生き延びるということ。
To live on while being exposed to society.And registering some sort of difficulty in life.
関係性の中で失っていくものを取り戻していくような連続写真の合間にできる隙間に存在する領域を奪わないようにという願いでもあるかもしれません。
So it is a little bit akin to some sort of hope.Where we could regain something which we lose necessarily within relations, or to recognize that which exists only between continuous frames of photography.
名称を与え、イメージを作り出してきたのが私たちであるならば、名称を剥奪し、イメージを解放することも可能なのかもしれない。
if it is us who have given names to things and have produced images, maybe it is also us as well who can deprive those names from things to liberate images.
移動して展示をすることは私自身を柔軟に生きることを示唆してくれる。
To exhibit while I travel implies that one can live flexibly as I try to do at this moment.
重要なことは制限やルールがある中でどのようにそこから浸透し拡充し空間を自由につかみ取ることができるかという挑戦なのではと考えるようになります。
So I have begun to think that what matters is that despite all the rules and regulations, it might be possible to sort of like think about and practice a certain symbiosis and extension through which we can more freely grasp space.
今回はサンディエゴの大学のウェンディさん、トロント大学のサブリナさんで、井上真由美さん、中曽根香織さんとミーティングを重ねて、それぞれの都市を考え、壁のサイズ、素材、空間のイメージ、建物のイメージ、一つ一つをクリアしながらここにたどり着くことができました。
So for this particular meeting and exhibit, we have been having a series of meetings with Wendy at UC San Diego and also Sabrina at the University of Toronto, where we are visiting in a few days, as well as Kaori and Mayumo, particularly about the sizes and materials of the walls, the images of the spaces we have yet to visit, the images of buildings, these materialities, so to speak, one by one, and we have finally arrived here.
このような違う場所にいる他者とその思いを共有し合うこの経験もきっと Living Otherwise という生き方を考える過程なのではないかと感じるようになりました。
So I've come to think that to exchange thoughts and experiences with these people in a different place, distant place where I have never been before, seems to be a kind of a process of living otherwise.
このような機会を与えていただいたウェンディさん、サブリナさん、関係者の方々とまたお越しいただいた皆さんに深く感謝します。ありがとうございました。
So I'd like to thank everyone, including Wendy, Sabrina, and everyone involved who has made this event and exhibit possible, as well as those who are here in the audience today. I'm not an artist in any way. I'm a scholar primarily of literature, comparative literature.Now based in Tokyo, but previously I worked in Okinawa at this National University in Okinawa for about 4 years. And my specialties, if there are, would be post-colonial studies and literature. So I and a little bit of aesthetic theory. So I thought what I can bring to this gathering is not to sort of like give a comment or a summation of their works in a way, but talk a little bit more coming from my scholarship that tends to go to a kind of abstract, sometimes surrealist, definitely politically leftist, but usually in a kind of contentious relationship with the more mainstream, what you might call an anti-colonial nationalist discourse and political movement in Okinawa. So you might say a kind of a bit more avant-garde, experimental, current of art that's kind of sympathetically, critically aligned to, but also sometimes against, more mainstream activist formation in Okinawa. So, and I also wanted to use this keyword coming from Sabrina, University of Toronto, Living Otherwise. Subtitle is a De-Imperial Mode of Aesthetics. I think one specific moment in the post-war history of Okinawa in relation to U.S. military occupation is the peasants' land expropriation, sort of between 1953 and 56, to build a few very large U.S. bases, Marines bases, and university students stood against that quite courageously, actually, because the university itself was kind of mainly founded by U.S. military government, USCA. And one central site of resistance was this university literary magazine called University of the Ryukyu's Literature. And it was really courageous because as soon as these student writers and poets wrote their works and published them in this student publication, they were immediately translated into English, surveyed, scrutinized, and some of these students were expelled from the university in 1956. So Arakawa Akira is one such poet at this time. I think he was born in sort of around 1932, so he was very young, and he wrote this poem, a long poem called An Orphan's Song. So I'm just gonna read a little bit from this. In translation, so just an excerpt. So, once the sky of this island was deep, so was the sea of this island. But yes, not only were the sky and the sea deep, so was the green of the mountain, so was the heart of the people. And now, where has the beautiful language of this island gone? The rising of the sea tide, an explosion that begins with it, the flow of morning mist, a gun smoke that begins with it. Skipping a lot of pages. Women, stop being hypocrites. Children, stop being blind. Men, stop being an authority. We must harmonize our song with people's message, which surges forth and covers the entire land. So again, I would really like to appreciate the fact that this poet, who was in his early 20s, wrote this protest poem against U.S. Occupation, land expropriation, and other violent processes as well. And again, in 1956, students in this literary magazine were expelled or suspended because of very visible American pressure. So, first, I would like to acknowledge that it's very important, and I'll think about this fact a lot because I myself teach at a university now as a professor. So, you know, if students want to protest, organize, I'll think about this poem a lot, actually. The subsequent generation of poets began to critique Arakawa's kind of, let's say, for the sake of time, propagandistic aesthetics, where the figure of the poet looms as if he is a leader of a nation, race, ethnicity, what have you. Kiyota Masanobu is one such poet. He was born, I think, in 1937, so a little bit younger than Arakawa, and he was an avid reader of everything from surrealism to existential philosophy of that time. So you can see that in his critique of what he thought was Arakawa's kind of propagandistic poetry, let's say. So in 1961, he published this essay again in the same student publication. It's called Metamorphosis into the Object. But the object is this surrealist term that was circulating in Japanese language at that time, coming from French surrealism, obviously, objet. So he wrote this, and I'll just read, so maybe you can just get a feel of his critique of Arakawa. The problem won't be solved by proposing a prescription. nor will it be ameliorated through a normative form of perception that seduces us to let go of our attempts to think logically. If these methods risk overlooking the very status of the object in society, and by doing so, leave unexamined the current state of our alienation, I propose instead to deepen precisely such a state of alienation so that an alternative form of alienation emerges within itself and impresses itself upon the first form of alienation. Only the logic that allows us to own the things, mono, that proliferate upon the cracks of variously demarcated division of labor in the systematized society is capable of interrupting the very alienation. Instead of fearing objectification, it is more productive to willingly become an object first, and then to explore what necessarily exceeds such an objectification in the space where the notion of human subject is already bankrupt as a condition of human existence. The reality is not the only thing that changes. We ourselves are changing and will change. By achieving our metamorphosis into the object, we will be able to query into a more fundamental condition of human existence. So I'm going to really reductively reduce this argument into sort of like its kernel or essence, but what are the ways in which we can stop being a subject in a kind of existential sense? You know, we who are aware of our mental being, our cognitive capacity. I'm thinking this, I'm feeling this right now. A perception or something like that. But that comes with the status of our socially ascribed subjectivity as well, class, race, gender, nationality, what have you, right? And these things are given. These are not the things of our own active choosing. So how is that possible? Because insofar as we are tied to these various facets of subjectivity, then that implies our status within hierarchy, within society. University student, someone who wants to lead this nascent political movement into some sort of fruition. So Arakawa saying to women, do this, saying to children, you guys, do that. Two men act in this way so that we can topple US militarizing regime. This is one way in which the subject appears in a society, and this implies hierarchy, male intellectual leading the rest of the population into some sort of action and representing the race, representing the nation, so to speak. And Kiyota's take on that is, well, that's a kind of a propaganda, and that's a form of elite intellectuals' usage of power. So instead of that, can we become something that he calls the object instead of the subject? I feel like this type of argument bears much resonance with what we used to have in post-colonial studies, a sort of like a critique of anti-colonial nationalism, but of course from a perspective of critique of colonialism. And precisely Edward Said, in his 1993 Culture and Imperialism, tries to critique anti-colonial nationalism and its pitfalls for the sake of a kind of a better form, more viable form of anti-colonial aesthetics and politics. And I think this argument, this type of argument, is familiar to many people, but I'm just going to repeat it. So he first cites Partha Chatterjee to say this. Chatterjee shows that successful anti-imperialist nationalism has a history of
evasion and avoidance, and that nationalism can become a panacea for not dealing with economic disparities within the nation, social injustice, and the capture of the newly independent state by a nationalist elite. There is also, however, a consistent intellectual trend within the nationalist consensus that is vitally critical, that refuses the short-term blandishments of separatist and triumphalist slogans in favor of the larger, more generous human realities of community among cultures, peoples, and societies. This community is the real human liberation portended by the resistance to imperialism. So I find it very interesting that he's almost like saying within this thing that we call anti-colonial nationalism, within that, there's something else. So in a sense, anti-colonial nationalist formation in colonial space like Okinawa has a possibility, but it has a possibility as a critique. It has a possibility as a sort of an internal sympathetic critique of more mainstream ways of thinking. That is anti-colonial nationalism, where it is really easy to produce its own elite who represents the rest of the nation to the outside. So not only in Okinawa, but elsewhere as well, these, you know, these intellectuals who initially start off as elite intellectuals critical of colonialism usually have relations of collusion with imperial elites outside, or those who work for international organizations like IMF, World Bank, what have you. So I hear that sort of argument in Said here, which I think is quite similar to Kiyota Masanobu's critique of the earlier generation of intellectuals in Okinawa, like Arakawa. Okay, one more concept, I'm sorry. And when Kiyota says it's better, more fruitful to explore our way of being as the object, it sort of also sounds like Foucault thinking about how we may exit the situation in which being a subject already implies it's an effect of power. It doesn't pre-exist the working of power. And Foucault in Discipline and Punish says something like this. So I'll just read again, sorry. Discipline produces subjected and practiced bodies, docile bodies. Discipline increases the forces of the body in economic terms of utility and diminishes these same forces in political terms of obedience. In short, it dissociates power, pouvoir, from the body on the one hand. It turns it into an aptitude, a capacity, which it seeks to increase. On the other hand, it reverses the course of the energy, the power puissance, that might result from it and turns it into a relation of strict subjection. If economic exploitation separates the force and the product of labor, let us say that disciplinary coercion establishes in the body a constricting link between an increased aptitude and increased domination. So being a subject, including racial national subject like Okinawan, for example, is possible only within the kind of an international economy of multiple nation states in which one is interpolated as the national subject. And there's Okinawan elite, there's Okinawan working class, there are non-Okinawan migrant working class people who are constantly surveyed, and there are also American military personnel. So all of these social subjects have to work within a kind of prescribed modality of differential labor in order to be given their space of living in the kind of spatial zones within the island. So that's a disciplinary power that makes us a subject. And I think Foucault is quite explicit here. He says, this type of discipline power produces us as a subject, substratum of power, where my economic ability, economically productive ability must be maximized, but my political agency must be minimized. That's the way in which we are sort of like tolerated as a socially viable subject. And Kiyota might say, I agree, so let's exit that way of being a subject as being subjectivated, subjugated to the grid of power. And it's interesting that in the past 20 years, perhaps, Foucauldian critiques of sort of like the figure of Okinawa are quite strong within Okinawa studies in Okinawa. So it's very interesting. These scholars like Shinjo Ikuo, who appeared in the interview in this LP magazine that Kaori edits, and some of younger scholars who were his students one time, like Doi Tomoyoshi, they use Foucauldian terms like genealogy of deportability of non-Okinawa migrant workers in this book on the right-hand side is very much Foucauldian. On the left-hand side, Shinjo Ikuo's Okinawa Okiku, listening to Okinawa, where he says listening to Okinawa doesn't mean listening to Okinawan people within the island, but he says what I mean by listening is trying to audit that which escapes the binary opposition of mainland Japanese and peripheral Okinawan races. How can we listen to sort of like, not to the subjectivated voices, but almost like an asubjective noises that escape the binary opposition of constructed racial categories. So Shinjo Ikuo's contribution to this kind of more like a deconstructive Okinawa studies is quite large, I would say, within the island of within the academic space of Okinawa today. Because I want to talk about art as well, I just want to introduce this artist, painter Adania Masayoshi, who was born in 1921, but died really young in 1967. His work was very different from other painters who came of age in the 1950s. Again, sort of like the height of the very ruthless period of American military occupation, 1950s. Around that time and period after that, I think a lot of painters in Okinawa kind of capitulated to just Orientalism, basically. But they argued that it's not Orientalism, it's authenticity. But of course, we know that these two almost always overlap, right? The more you want to get out of an Orientalist mold of images in a kind of non-critical, dialectical manner, then you also hang on to same vocabulary of images and claim those as somehow authentic. So you see these painterly images of women clad in traditional quote-unquote Okinawa garments with the Okinawa, distinctively Okinawa hairstyle. It's titled Two Women. On the right-hand side, you also see an image of nature, which is very different from that of mainland Japan. A lot of, I don't know, grasses, sugarcane, blue sky, deep blue sky, and whatnot. And Adania, this painter, was friends with the painters who produced these images, but he was more interested in abstraction and landscape simultaneously. Some always curious as to what Satoko has to say about Adania's works. But in many of his images, there are these stretching perpendicular lines stretching out upward. And these are always torqued, I don't know, as if they kind of suffer passively in exposition to a lot of different social forces, social pressures, but they also try to undergo their metamorphosis as well. I'm not sure. So these are studies that he did for the very famous painting called Tower in 1958. And he was very fond of sketches. And he was a really good theorist of painting as well. So this is what he had to say about his fondness of sketches. Adania said, because sketch is a memorandum, its maker does not intend to turn it into a work of art. We only jot down that which touches us. That is, not all sketches become works of art. While works of art can be created without sketches, since drawings are made as a basis for later works, they contain compositions. But sketches lack such a prospect. By thinking in this way, we can argue that although sketches are sources for creating final works, they also hold enough vitality to be works themselves. Not only painters, but anyone, I'm sure, would wish to retain a record of a moment when one suddenly encounters a beautiful landscape, something strong, or that which leaves us an impression within us, unquote. And 1960s, mid to late 1960s in Okinawa is an interesting period because people are seeing American soldiers differently by this time. American soldiers in the form of corpses being vulnerable and registering the effect of racially segregated space between Caucasian soldiers and Black soldiers in the central part of Okinawa. So a lot of images of American soldiers in the mid to late 60s register that kind of vulnerability as opposed to this really ruthless, violent soldiers in the 50s. So Adania had this series of sketches, I might say, or studies of an American soldier in the midst of the Vietnam War. So this, I think, is the first one. American flag or something is still visible, helmet, rifle, radio, and all these things. And it undergoes a first process of abstraction, like that, and it becomes something like that, more impersonal. I don't know what name one should give to this body in terms of race, nationality, maybe even occupation. And it's called Longing for Home in my translation, Bokyo, thinking about home, but it seems like he's facing towards the left. So if I am oriented northward in Naha, or for example, it seems like he's facing Southeast Asia, it seems, as opposed to US mainland, I feel. So it's a very interesting orientation of a body in the painting that is called Longing for Home. I feel like he is looking towards Vietnam as opposed to the US. And the final work. So I'm interested in these types of objects, things, human bodies that are forlorn, cut off from their environment, social environment in which one must appear as the subject, typically, with all the determinations of race and nation and gender and sexuality and whatnot. But here, it's almost like a process in which one loses, drops determination. So and then he, in the 60s, he produced a lot of paintings of U.S. military bases. But some people say, you know, did he like U.S. military? Because he produced so many images of U.S. military. But of course, what I see is more like vertical lines that cut this sort of landscape. So his painting runway is runway, of course, that enables U.S. military logistics, but it's also about the cuts and interruptions of these lines that disable this logistical network, it seems. Again, I'm kind of reductively talking about it. At the University of Ryukyu's library, they used to show this painting, A Throng of Towers from 1963. And I really liked this when I was working there. Now, instead of one solitary tower, one solitary body, of someone who was an American soldier in Okinawa. We see a lot of lines, a lot of solitary lines of different lengths and different ways of reverberating, shaking, trembling in the space. So I thought I can contribute to this gathering by way of just reading some quotes that are quite conceptual, coming from the 1950s and 60s in Okinawa, where there were very serious discussion about the status of the subject. Some people went for it. Some people offered critiques of the notion of subjectivity as a viable form of opposition, resistance, anti-colonial opposition. And some painters produce images of something that is very singular and forlorn, as opposed to particular and nameable and specifiable. So I just want to end with some questions. First one is, how might we conceptualize living otherwise as plural orientations, not to prefixed identities as such, but to something like singularities in articulation? That's my question number one. Second, how do such singularities necessitate practices of fugitivity from the imperial distribution of hierarchically differential subjects as the condition of possibility for their emergence? Next, how is the anti-imperial nature of this ensemble or assemblage one that Kiyota tries to encapsulate in his notion of commune of the objects, and the painter Adania in his painting of a throng of towers? Last, those working in the 1960s were cognizant of the constitutively deterritorializing aspect of this aesthetics and its politics. So in the midst of the Vietnam War, these people really thinking about something like fugitive type of transnationality, not the kind of solidarity among prefixed subjects, but by forging a solidarity, their subjectivities change. And maybe they're not even subjects anymore in some moments. Of course, that's a very challenging project. So in terms of that, they're very radical. It's a very radical critique of subjectivity-based politics in Okinawa at that time. But of course, these are all male intellectuals and male artists, very heteronormative, very male-centric. So the question, obviously, perhaps at this moment is, but what about its constitutively non-heteronormative aspect of gender and sexuality politics, if we want to think about living otherwise as a concept and practice of a kind of a viable de-imperial and anti-imperial practice of politics of aesthetics? Sorry, I was all over the place, but that's what I wanted to say. Thank you so much.